Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. I'm actually here in the Progressive Radio Network studio, and I haven't been here since they made the big move, and it looks fabulous. I'm really happy to be here, and I think it'll sound a lot better, so I'm excited about that. Unfortunately, you probably won't hear the Mr. Softy truck passing through like it always does when I'm recording from home, so we'll have to make that up later. I wanted to let you know, I mentioned this last week, we finished our Happy Halloween, or our Swingin' Halloween food show. It's a fondue party. We were finishing it up last week, and it's ready for you to view at the responsibleeatingandliving.com website. Part one is up, and part two will likely be up by tomorrow. It's really fun. I want you to watch it, okay? So visit responsibleeatingandliving.com, and then after you watch it, let me know what you think. And you can find me at info@realmeals.org. We had a lot of fun making it, and I hope you have fun watching it and trying out the recipes. We've gotten a lot of great response from our cashew cheese fondue. We made a lot of it, which is great because I'm getting to eat it a lot now. And one of the things that's great about this recipe is you can freeze it. So we made a big bunch of it, put it in different jars, and whenever we need a little cheese, we take it out of the freezer. It's really, really good. I also wanted to mention that we were out on a road trip this weekend, and it's always fun to do a little traveling. And one thing that really helps is to plan ahead and pack a cooler of all kinds of fun things to eat along the way, whether or not you're able to find restaurants or stores that have healthy food, it's good to bring some along. And if you visit my What Vegans Eat blog post, you can see some of the things that we enjoyed this weekend. I want to bring on my first guest, Judith Haskins. She is the younger daughter of Shirley and Morris Hyman. She grew up on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, New York City, and attended Music and Art High School and earned her degree in comparative literature from City College of New York and a master's degree from City University in writing. Judith lived in La Jolla, California, as well as on the Riviera Maya in the Yucatan in Mexico. She has taught at various alternate and regular high schools in Manhattan, teaching English literature, and has been a vegetarian for 40 years and in the last 5.5 years, a vegan. She decided, along with her mother and sister, Sally Laura, to publish her late father, Dr. Morris Hyman's manuscript, Congenital Alterable Transmissible Asymmetry, The Spiritual Meaning of Disease and Science. Welcome to It's All About Food, Judith. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much, Karen, for having me on. Although I'm sorry that I can't be in your beautiful new studio because I'm with my 102-year-old vegan mother. She was 100 when the Shirley and Mo YouTube video was made of her. You heard about that?
I did. I just watched it earlier, and I posted it on my Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
It was really something and very inspiring. I especially loved, I'm not going to get it right, maybe you can quote it, but when your mom asked your father what she would do, how could she possibly go on without him after he died?
Right. Would you like me a few minutes to explain how this video came about?
Sure.
Which is quite interesting, actually. 3 years ago, when my mother was 99, on a very rainy February at Columbus Circle, a young man came up to my mother. She was under an umbrella, and she was heading to the swimming pool at my sister's apartment building on 57th Street. And this young man turned out to be Brandon Stanton, who is the author of Humans of New York, a best-selling book that has been all about amazing New Yorkers and their candid comments. Anyway, he took a very close-up photograph of her because he got under the umbrella with her, and he asked her if she had something inspiring to tell people, at which point my mother said that when my father was dying, she said, "Mo, what will I do without you?" And my father said, "Take the love you have for me and spread it around." Now, we had no idea that my mother said this to anybody on the street. She didn't come home and tell us anything about this. This happened in February. The following June, a friend of my mother's, and she has many, many friends, said, I was on American Airlines, and I opened the American Way magazine, and there's a picture of your mother, and the quote, take the love you have for me and spread it around. We thought, what in the world is this all about? Several weeks later, some other people called. Oh, this guy called Brandon Stanton is on TV, and he's talking about this 80-year-old woman that he met. He was on MSNBC. He was on the Ali Wentworth show. He was person of the week for Diane Sawyer. And finally, we thought, well, he's going around town describing an 80-year-old woman. He didn't know her name, and he didn't really know anything about her. But what had happened is when he went home that day, he looked at his blog, and he posted the photograph, and 81,000 people responded. And I believe what happened, we knew nothing about, I don't even know what a blog looks like, basically. After my generation. Anyway, but he was getting, I think, like 200 or 500 hits a day when he would post these photographs. All of a sudden, 81,000 people responded. So when we emailed him and said, hello, Brandon, this woman that you're describing as an 80-year-old is actually our 99-year-old vegan mother. Can we invite you over for some vegan cupcakes? So he did come over, and that was the following, it was January of 2014, and we had a wonderful time, and he took some beautiful photographs of my mother. And then we gave him some stories, and he put them on his website. And then he said, I'd like to make a video of your mother. And so that video was made the following February 2014. It came out in April. And apparently it's been very popular. So.
Yeah, it has. I really enjoyed it. It has hundreds of thousands of views, which is wonderful.
Well, that exemplifies the spiritual part of my father, the take the love you have for me and spread it around. Many people interpreted that as a very romantic comment, but in a way, he was saying transcend the romantic love that you have for your dying spouse, and once they've died, take that love and give it to all kinds of people that are not your spouse or your children or your mother, but go beyond that. And he always did that. He was full of love, but he was a doctor who practiced on the Upper West Side at the Bellnard, which I think is very close to where your former studio was, or maybe I'm wrong about that.
Upper West Side, we were at between 83rd and 84th
Well,
Street.
We're on 86th Street.
Ah, between, there you go. Mm-hmm.
And as I say, I would have loved to come to the studio, but because it getting through traffic at this time of the day, and I have to be home to give my mother a dinner, her vegan soup, etc. She's eating very well. She has a wonderful appetite. Anyway, she's 2 years older than she was in that video. She's not exactly the same, but she has, my sister and I like to say, she has 98% of her marbles, and my sister and I got the other two marbles.
Well, I want to talk about this book.
Right, right.
And I want to say, first let me repeat the title, because it is a...
Should I explain the title?
Why not? Congenital, okay. Alterable, Transmissible Asymmetry, The Spiritual Meaning of Disease and Science.
Okay, well, first of all, the book was written in 1970, and my father never made any attempts to publish it. The first four words are his definition of true disease, or rather, disease. And then the spiritual meaning of disease and science. And my father was a deeply spiritual man, but not religious.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't ascribe to any religion or practice any religion whatsoever. And he makes that kind of clear in the first page of his only 144-page book, which, by the way, though, is very, very dense. But I think it's a wonderful read. Anyway, the first four words describe disease. Now, if you read the New York Times or you watch television, the word disease is used interchangeably with virus. For example, someone will say the Ebola virus, and in the next sentence they'll say this disease. Well, which is it? Is it a virus or a disease? My father makes the distinction, and it's not a semantic one, that a virus is something you catch from outside. marauding bacteria, microscopic, he used to call them microscopic lions and tigers. In other words, you're being attacked from without. Whereas disease has, first of all, the inherited component, and diseases like lung disease, heart disease, and cancer. Although there's one of those four words he felt did not apply to cancer, and that was the alterable. But that's in the book, and that he explains each of those four very clearly. But disease has the inherited component. For example, you can be in a room with 1,000 people that have cancer. You're not going to catch cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to catch heart disease or lung disease. Now, why is this distinction important? Well, we've made a lot of strides with the infectious conditions, with AIDS, with Ebola virus. There are a lot of strides that have been made, vaccines and all that. Although the more vaccines that come about, the greater the problem arises and the more microbes. He mentions that in the book, too. By the way, I didn't write the book, and I'm not a doctor, so if I sound a little bit less than as sharp as I'd like to be, it's because it's not my book, even though I've read it many times. But with heart disease and lung disease and cancer, we haven't made those strides at all. I mean, you know, the war against cancer, look where it's going. Although I think it's very interesting that for us vegans, just yesterday, big news that the World Health Organization is finally conceding that, yeah, there is a link between meat eating and cancer.
Yeah. It's such old news, but it's new news, which is so crazy about it.
Well, my father became a vegetarian in the 1950s, and he was convinced then that there is a link between meat eating and cancer. He also was convinced that we evolved upon this planet as herbivores. And he wasn't talking about the teeth or the intestinal tract, but something else. And that's in the fourth chapter of his book, The Physiology of Man, in which he talks about the things that we manufacture in our body, the things that we require that we don't manufacture, which creates evidence of what our diet has to be. I'll give you an example. We don't manufacture vitamin C in our body, and yet it is a crucial vitamin, absolutely crucial. Linus Pauling did groundbreaking research decades ago on vitamin C and said we need very large doses of that. And my father was in agreement. And vitamin C, by the way, is not toxic, because anything that your body doesn't utilize will pass out when you urinate.
Mm-hmm.
Vitamin B complex and C, my father was very big on those two. Well, anyway, so we don't manufacture vitamin C in our body, and yet it is absolutely crucial. So that means that we had to evolve in a place on Earth where, and he believed the tropics, where we had access to fresh fruits and vegetables right off the tree, the branch, right out of the ground. And the minute you pick a fruit or a vegetable, it diminishes in the vitamin content. Now, what's interesting, and what also explains why we are not dairy eaters, why we should stay as far away from the milk of any animal as possible, what's interesting is that mother's milk, female human breast milk, has a lot of vitamin C in it. Did you know that?
I did. Well, when I read the book, I found that out.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, see, I'm good. So you read the book. I'm so happy. Well, anyway, but cow's milk, because cows manufacture vitamin C in their body, a calf has no need when it is nursing on a cow, has no need for extra vitamin C. On the other hand, we manufacture cholesterol in our body.
Mm-hmm.
No carnivore manufactures cholesterol in its body. So anyway, so you read the book. Well, I hope you found it interesting.
Well, what I wanted to say about it was, number one, when I first got it, I thought, oh, it's a thin little book. It won't take me long to read.
Oh, right.
And I read all the books by authors or people representing the book that I speak about on my show.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, I started reading it maybe Thursday or Friday, and
okay.
I went, oh, my goodness, this is very difficult to read. It's very difficult, and it takes some of the sentences are long. They may have double negatives in them. They have a lot of concepts, and not all of them are the same in the same sentence, so you have to digest a little bit at the time before
right.
you continue. It's
right. You really have to pay attention.
You have to, yeah. And normally I just zip through reading books. And,
this isn't a zipping book.
No, it is not, but I found it very poetic.
Oh, yes, I think it's beautifully written.
Beautifully. And then once I could digest something, I like relaxed in it, thinking, oh,
right,
of course,
right,
this is right, obvious. Somehow,
right,
like my soul knew or my consciousness
right,
knew.
Right. That's very nice.
And
hear.
it made sense. So I plowed through.
Well, I think people might get nervous that it's not a typical book. Today, typical books are books of one idea, like that guy Gladstone who wrote Blink. And a few of them, he had one idea or the tipping point, and I bought those books and I read them, and you can zip right through them, and they're fun to read. He would have one idea, and then he would take a million anecdotes, some interesting, some not so interesting, and squeeze everything in to make it fit. Like, ooh, that's what, but when you finish the book, it's like, what was I really reading? Was it really of any consequence? I have to say, I believe on, in my father's book, there's so many ideas mm-hmm. that people might never have read before. And yet, as you say, their soul might say, you know, this is absolutely true. You know, this is real. For example, the part about smoking, how he explains the effect of smoking on your body. Just recently, doctors have said, well, you know, smoking doesn't just cause emphysema and lung cancer. It affects other cells. Well, my father explained that when you put a cigarette in your mouth, every cell in your body is defending against this poisonous intruder. Now, he said it in a much more poetic way mm-hmm. than I did. You remember that, right?
Yes.
And I thought it was beautifully written. The thing is, I think people need to relax when they read the book and, okay, so I didn't quite get that. Let me move along. First of all, it's a book where you have to turn off all other devices. You can't be multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be watching TV, talking on the cell phone, looking at YouTube mm-hmm. videos. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. No, this requires 150% of your concentration.
Let me ask you a question. Will you read it again? Do you find it?
Well, I would like to. The thing is, I've always got all these different books thrown at me
okay.
for this
well,
program, but I've dog-eared many pages.
Okay. And can I ask you what your favorite insight was in the book?
Well, there were a number of things. So one of the things, he kept referring to the cell and how important it is to nourish all cells and that they all need to get the right nutrition. And when
right.
they and what I thought was fascinating at one point was talking about when one part of the body has a problem.
Right.
And, you know, I can't use all of his correct terminology, but let's
right.
say you have a heart failure or you have a problem and you're treated. He described how the whole body kind of goes down to that minimum functioning level.
Right, right.
And,
right.
and so your body, when you have an issue somewhere, your whole body is going to drop. You're not able to work at maximum efficiency. And mm-hmm. and some of our drugs actually encourage that operating at
that,
a minimum.
Right. I think his point was that the drugs don't bring up the weakened cells, they weaken the other cells
mm-hmm.
so that to recreate a symmetry, because disease is asymmetry. It's off balance where not everything is functioning equally. So the drugs, people think, oh, I take a drug, like you take an aspirin, and you think, oh, it's curing my headache, got rid of the pain. No, it didn't get rid of the pain. What it did is dull some of the sensations in your brain. It weakened the cells in your brain that would perceive the pain. That's not really such a great thing, is it?
No.
The pain is there. I mean, pain is there to let us know there's something wrong. Yeah, I mean, so, well, good.
Yeah, there were a few other things I wanted to bring up, looking to see if I could find it. He was very diplomatic, I think, in expressing his discontent with current science and current medical practice.
Not always. I think he referred to it as a dismal sometimes.
Yeah. And so there, at one point he was talking about how physicians... Oh, here it is. Can I read it? Page 93, there is a similarity between physician and psychiatrist, which would be astonishing if we did not recognize that each originates from a comparable spiritual immaturity. For notice how identical is their confusion of shadows with reality, as well as therapeutic delusion, which seeks, on the one hand, to halt disease without restoring nourishment of the bereft cell, and on the other, to disperse the anxieties of the mind without inspiring the contiguous soul to that creation of beauty by which it ascends once more into its spiritual heavens. That's a big mouthful, but what I got from that is there are many mental illnesses and mental issues where people are in therapy forever or they're given drugs, whatever, but perhaps if they were encouraged to be of service to others,
they would
find ways to heal themselves.
My father used to take out his prescription pad. He made sure that he had a half an hour for every single patient, and he used to take out his prescription pad and write down, take care of a sick animal, do some volunteer work in a hospital. For him, spiritual was being concerned with the needs of others, being not a material person, but a person of concern for others who didn't put themselves first, who wasn't part of the me generation or the greedy generation. In fact, my father, he could certainly, if he were alive today, would never have been able to do it, but because my mother was a teacher, it was a two-income family, he charged $5 a visit for 30, throughout his 30-year practice. He never raised his fees, and if you never paid him, he continued to see you. And he said, I don't want to get rich on the backs of other people suffering. Now, and, you know, you can hear about doctors like this in small towns in the Midwest and everything, but when you're on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, where all the doctors were driving Cadillacs and their wives were in minks, and my father was making house calls with his VW bug, and actually, now that I look back on it, in the 60s and 70s, he was putting his life at risk because New York City was a little bit of a more violent, prone place. It was also very interesting in those days, but people used to regularly break into his car when he was making house calls at 3 a.m. in the morning to get the syringes for the drug, you know, the drug addicts, and full of drug addicts in the neighborhood, and the prescription pads. He probably was the only doctor in New York City that had the MD license plate removed. He didn't want MD on his car anymore after they broke it. Now, that's a pretty good story. He also would be horrified at the amount of drugs that Americans are taking today. Absolutely horrified.
Yes.
He, my sister and I grew up probably the most drug-free, Upper West Side, middle-class people in New York that there are. I mean, I took no doctor prescribed medications whatsoever, maybe an occasional antibiotic, but very rarely. And, you know, today people are taking drugs, and look at the side effects. Look at the side effects. Look at the side effects of the drugs people take for mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is suicide.
Yep.
And we don't ask the questions, you know, what drugs. Look at Robin Williams. It's very distressing to me. I'm sure they said that he was on some psychiatrist prescribed drugs, but they don't make the link that, well, how many of people who put things around their neck and kill themselves? There was a Kennedy girl. The number of people have done this,
too many.
And they're not. What's that?
It's too many.
Yeah.
Way too many.
Okay, you're depressed, and now you might have thoughts of suicide. Where does it go if you're depressed and you start thinking about suicide? I mean, it doesn't go well, does it?
Not at all.
Well, since I've been a vegan, and you've been a vegan much longer than me, I have become convinced that aggression, depression, and anxiety can all be stilled by a vegan diet. And it's very interesting. I have my veterinarian for my dog the dog in the video, Chock Chock, who's now 15, he just became a vegan recently.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, he was a vegetarian, mm-hmm. and I had some talks with him about it. I'm not the one who influenced him, of course, but when I saw him, I see him only once a year or something like that. He said, yeah, and now he's a vegan, and he seemed very cheerful. And I said, do you feel any physical differences? Because I did, transitioning only from vegetarian to vegan. And he said, no, I always felt physically great. He said, but I do feel emotionally better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an emotional component mm-hmm. to it. And now they're talking about the gut, the bacteria in the gut, which comes from the various things that people eat, and how that affects mood and all this. All these people, you know, they talk about the people who are mentally ill. Oh, let's keep guns out of their hands. How about feeding them a better diet? How about every prison having a garden? How about every school having its own garden?
Amen to that.
Yeah.
So I just had like one more question because we're almost out of time, believe it or not.
That.
I know. So I'm thinking that most current doctors will not want to read this book.
No, they'll be very angry about it.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that most of the public won't even be able to understand it, unfortunately.
Well, I think...
or at least have the patience to take the time to digest it. I want everybody to read this.
You do want everybody to read it?
I do. Of course I do.
You don't think it was a bad idea that we published it?
No, I think every doctor should read this.
Of course, we self-published because I don't think there's a publishing house in the world at this moment that would publish it. And yet...
Lantern Books might publish it.
Well, if half the things that my father said in this book are true, it's an astonishing work.
I just know that a number of doctors I've spoken to, and some of them are doctors that I've just gone to for medical reasons, and then some of them are the vegan doctors that I know and care very much about, really stay away from the spiritual portion of life and health. And
why?
I don't know. They're afraid, or they think that they won't be taken as seriously.
Exactly. Well, I have to just say very quickly, because we only have a few more minutes, my father, throughout his life, had what he would describe as mystical experiences. You're absolutely right, though. People think, what are you, a wacko, a crackpot? You know, what is this? But I would say the closest thing you could say to that is he saw the face of God. He had absolute certainty that we are reincarnated, that we go through various incarnations, and that the point of being alive is to grow spiritually and to get further and further on to an enlightened understanding. And in terms of health, he would advise two things. An herbivorous diet, I don't even think the word vegan was used when he wrote this manuscript, an herbivorous diet and a spiritual life. And with those two, you would be as healthy as you possibly could be. Now, we're all born with weaknesses, as he said in the book.
Well, people will have to find out more about that when they read this, and I highly recommend that they do. Judith,
I'm so happy you recommend it. I'd love to talk to you sometime.
I was going
to
say, maybe we can talk off air, and maybe I can have you back, but I'm not done talking with you.
Oh, you still have another couple of minutes left?
No. I have to go now, but I want to continue our conversation.
Well, I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. And I'm also so happy that you read the book and that you got something out of it. And that's why we put the book out there, because we think there are many people, just like the 81,000 who loved what he said about take the love and spread it around. I think there's a spiritual vacuum. And, you know, you can put the philosophy together with the science. And it works just fantastically. Well, I thank you so much for
Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. We'll talk soon. That was Judith Haskins, and she was talking about her late father's manuscript, which they've recently published, called Congenital, Alterable, Transmissible Asymmetry, The Spiritual Meaning of Disease and Science. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Let's take a very quick break, and I'll be back with my next guest, Elise Dessaulnier.